Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hey guys, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Today, I'm absolutely thrilled to be having a conversation with someone who I really admire and respect, and that is David Mullally from the Relentless Dentist Podcast. When it comes to dental podcasts, the Relentless Dentist is one that I listen to because A, David is a great interviewer, and B, he has some wonderful guests. And in this conversation, we get to put the microphone going in the other direction. And what I've learned is not only is David an incredibly nice and wise human being, he's got some incredible value to share when it comes to creating not just a fulfilling business, but a fulfilling life. In this conversation, we talk a lot about achievement versus fulfillment and how it's easy to confuse the two. And David shares some incredible insights and practical tips and tools so that you create a more fulfilling life, a high-performance life, rather than a life based solely on achievement. As we traverse the conversation, David shares a lot of his history through his background, through his undergraduate days, through military, and of course some of the lessons he's learned going into practice and beyond. It's a wide-ranging, far-reaching interview, and David does really share openly, freely, and there's some absolute pearls of wisdom that come during this conversation. So as always, I'm going to encourage you to have a pen and paper handy because I know that there's going to be things you're going to want to jot down and take back into your practice first thing Monday morning. For those listeners who are new to our podcast, feel free to come and join us at our sister Facebook group, the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, where we share tools, tips, training around creating a practice and a life that you love. It's a dentist-only Facebook group, and we'd love to see you across there. But right now, let's have a conversation with David Mullally from the Relentless Dentist Podcast. I know you're going to enjoy it, so please, as I said earlier, have a pen and paper handy. There's tons of good stuff coming your way. Here he is, David Mullally. David Mullally, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. How's things coming from Colorado?
Oh, so good. It's great to be with you again. I felt like the last time we chatted, pure gold came out of it. It was an honor to have you on my show and likewise to be on your show. I know so much about you virtually, but now to get to know you and actually see you has been a real thrill for me. So thanks again.
Oh, look, it's absolutely my pleasure. As we're just discussing off air, I was listening to that podcast that we recorded for The Relentless Dentist, which is your podcast, a fantastic show. And for anyone listening, I really recommend it. But I was listening to that episode last night and it reminded me just how much fun I had recording that with you because it was some similar background. You've got a history in the Army, I've got a history in the Navy, and obviously we kind of work in similar spaces. So it felt like, felt like meeting a kindred spirit.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm absolutely thrilled and delighted to have you on our show and see what comes of that. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
No doubt about it.
What I wanted to just talk about for a moment before we do get into the meat and potatoes of everything we're going to be discussing. One of the things I really liked about your show is that you started the show by asking about a success quote. And that's not something I normally do on my particular show. And it got me thinking about, you must have come across tons and tons of success quotes, tons of inspiration for yourself, for your listeners. And I'm curious about your own success quote because you get to ask that question so many times. I wonder how many people actually ask you that question.
Yeah, it's very rare, but it's an easy answer for me. I feel like all of my breakthroughs in life and in practice has been, sometimes it's a small leap. It's just stepping slightly out of my comfort zone. Sometimes it's jumping off the cliff and hoping my parachute opens on the way down, but it's all been on the other side of courage. And so there's a quote that I lean on when I'm feeling kind of uneasy and trying to decide, am I choosing courage or comfort in this particular situation? And it's in the cave you most fear lies the treasure that you seek. And I found that true time and time again. The place that I don't want to go into, there's a treasure inside. And so there's sometimes you have to choose to inflict a little bit of pain or what I call scheduled suffering, but know that there's lots of gems if you kind of endure and realize that that's where growth really happens. Just like in the gym, when under time and pressure, we can get stronger, and that's the same in our practices and outside the gym. So that's always been a quote that I kind of lean on as a crutch when I'm not feeling quite as powerful, because I need that reminder that there's gifts to be received if I'm willing to challenge that thinking.
Yeah, and it's a really wonderful quote. So firstly, thank you for sharing it. And I'm curious to ask you, what does courage mean to you? Does it mean not feeling the fear or is it really kind of, I guess, understanding that we all have moments of self-doubt, we all have moments of feeling a little less than and proceeding anyway? How do you see it?
For me, it's always been doing the thing that I fear. I've never really felt an absence of fear. Like, I've been doing dentistry for a long time, but if that patient is anxious, I feel some of that when I'm even giving them a mandibular block. That happens with business decisions and difficult conversations. And quite frankly, I've been podcasting for almost 5 years, and still sometimes these conversations, because I'm a wallflower by nature, it pushes me outside my comfort zone. But there's so many magical relationships that have come after the decision to really connect with people that you respect at a high level, people that you admire, mentors, idols, if you will, within the dental profession. And so I still feel that at a high level. A lot of times I think it gets suppressed to some degree because I become bigger than the challenge. But for me, it's never quite gone away completely. So it's just a recognition that it's there, and that facing into it as opposed to taking a step back into comfort is where I need to head if I want to continue to excel.
I think that's really, really wise. And I think it's also really real as well, because sometimes I'll look at Facebook and you see what's coming through people's Facebook feeds, and their Facebook life looks amazing. And and sometimes, you know, people put their best foot forward on Facebook. And I'm not here to be unkind to anyone at all, but I guess it's easy to feel that everyone else has got it all together and I'm the only one who feels this fear. And so I think for everyone listening there, what David shared is, it's all of us feel that fear every single day at some level, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and one of my mentors says to me is, never judge your own reality by comparing it to someone's Facebook.
It's funny that you say that, because one of my drivers when I started the podcast, Real Incidents Podcast, in 2009, was the sense of insecurity and insignificance I felt a lot of times after going to high-level continuing education event, because I just felt like my work would never look like that. Does he ever have any D-bonds on his veneers? It just looked like this perfect world, and it took me a long time. And I've been diligent about asking people these difficult questions, like a moment of crisis or when you felt like you weren't the world's greatest dentist. And come to find out, that's the reality. And so many times when we go to these seminars, we're just seeing someone's highlight reel and we're comparing them to our worst days, which is, to use an American football analogy, if you look at a Hall of Fame quarterback's, all of his touchdowns, that's one reality. But if you look at all the fumbles and interceptions, it's a completely different reality. The truth is that we lie somewhere in the middle, and I always feel stronger knowing that other people have suffered to some degree clinically. And I think it's just real. And I appreciate when dentists or non-dentists are willing to be authentic and vulnerable, because it allows us all to level up when we realize that we're not at the wrong side of the curve with some of these things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really comforting too. I certainly take a great deal of comfort from those moments as well. I want to just rewind for a second, David, because your background is quite interesting, and I'm curious to understand what got you into dentistry in the first place. Just to kind of go back a few years in time, what was it that inspired you to become a dentist?
Steve Jobs has a famous quote where he says, when you're moving forward, the dots don't really make sense, but when you look back, they all connect. I had a dentist that was a family friend. He'd put on haunted houses for the kids and 4th of July. He's a really entertaining personality. And he actually introduced my parents to one another. So I always felt like part of the family there. I could get the air water syringe and make a mess in the operatory. And while my childhood experiences, I wouldn't say were great, because I didn't take care of my teeth, I always felt like that was a comfortable place for me to be. And I think when I look back, that's the first seed that was planted. But the biggest pivot was when I was in undergrad. I was in athletic medicine. So I was essentially helping people, athletes at a high level at the University of Nebraska, rehab knees, rehab from surgery, simple things like inflammation after practice. So keep athletes healthy was my job. But I realized that a lot of the trainers that I worked with were married to their jobs. And I had seen that growing up in farming, and I wanted something different. And I ended up talking to the team dentist for the basketball team that I was working for at the time. And he invited me to his office. We talked for under an hour. And in that moment, I went from athletic trainer to dentist and never looked back. I think I was ready for the message, and he was a compelling salesman. And he told me a lot about the lifestyle and the impact and it triggered something in me. And from there, I had to make a lot of different decisions, but that led me directly into dental school. And as an interesting side note, I was a horrible student in undergrad for a bit of time. But when I found that purpose, I went immediately to 4.0 because I needed to make that happen to get into dental school. But still, some of my scores raised a lot of questions when I was interviewing. And he happened to be the director of admissions. And I have to think that that helped me get the nod into the one of the final slots of the class that year. So lots of moons aligned to make that happen for me.
Well, I think we're all glad that those moons did align, mate, because without that, we wouldn't have had your podcast. We wouldn't have had all the other things that you're doing. And so where did the Army fit into this? What was that, an undergraduate scholarship thing, or was it after graduating? When did you go into the military?
So in the U.S. Army, they get most of their doctors, whether it be veterinarians, pharmacists, medical doctors, dentists, through a program called the Health Profession Scholarship Program. And I'd done, at that same time that I decided to go into dentistry, I did a lot of self-reflection. It's when I started getting into the self-development literature, and I had done an exercise that essentially had me plan my own eulogy, and it really like scared me straight. And I don't know that I did a 180, but my habits and behaviors changed dramatically after that exercise. And one of the things that I wanted to do, because I'd seen it with some of my uncles, was to have an American flag draped over my casket at the end of the days. And so when it came time to figure out how to pay for dental school, that vision of leaving that piece of the legacy to say that I served my country aligned with an opportunity to have my dental school paid for. And so I applied for that scholarship. They paid for 4 years of dental school, and then I served in the Army Dental Corps for 5 years following that.
Yeah, fantastic. So during your time in the Army and indeed at dental school, what did you learn? Because one of my experiences in the military is that it's a great teacher, and there's lots of things that come out of that. And sometimes it's a teacher things that you might do taking forward into your practice, and other times there's things you might learn and go, that's not going to serve me so well. So I'm curious to understand what your lessons were coming out of the military.
Well, I did a residency year right after dental school. So that was an Army residency. And I was semi-confident coming out of dental school, but that made me incredibly confident working under specialists, having that hands-on attention, really being able to challenge my skill set, knowing that if I ended up in a jam on a third molar or a root canal, that they could help me figure it out. And so I was really challenged my abilities there. And I left that situation ready to set the world on fire with my dental skills. Unfortunately, I ended up in a deployable dental unit, and I was only doing dentistry part-time, and that was in Giebelstadt, Germany. And it was kind of at the height of the war with our conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we were set to deploy. So I had a Humvee, I had a generator, I could set up a dental office anywhere with my team. And it taught me a lot of things I wasn't expecting. One, I lived abroad, and before I lived in Nebraska, which those of you that aren't familiar with Nebraska and America, it's cornfields and cattle. And so I lived in this little sheltered bubble, and I'd never traveled much at all inside the United States or outside. And so it opened my mind to beliefs that would be contentious with mine. I started to see everything from food and wine and from things that would challenge my palate to religious and political beliefs. I opened my eyes to like, okay, now I see your side of the story, understand. And so it lit my world on fire from a cultural standpoint. From a clinical standpoint, I didn't get the reps that I really loved. We did a lot of cuspal coverage amalgams and extractions just so these guys could get back into training and war fighting. And that's what they want to do. That's what they're trained to do. But being in the military, it taught me a lot. You know, when you see loss of life and strain on family and dedication and courage and all these things that come almost cliche at the highest level, it really challenges who, when I look in the mirror, what does dedication look like for me? What does courage look like for me? What is perseverance and loyalty and all those sorts of things that we like to think we're at a high level? These guys, especially these special forces guys that jump out of perfectly good planes and run into dangerous caves and fall through ceilings in Afghanistan, they teach you that there's a whole nother level there. And so the exposure to the European culture and the exposure to the military culture really helped me almost chart a new course for my life. So I took from that experience what I could, because I didn't feel like I gained clinically as much as I had hoped, but the gifts were still there. I just had to look for them in a slightly different place.
So I'm wondering, because we spoke earlier about courage, and I'm wondering whether that seed for courage and what it means to you, it's obviously something that really resonates with you I'm wondering whether that seed grew, if you will, in that environment. Is that where it came from, or was it prior to that as well?
Yeah, I think it definitely did. I look whenever I'm feeling insecure, insignificant, down, lack of energy, I like to contrast my situation, which is usually a pretty good situation, when relatively speaking, with those that have really had not good situations, defied all odds. And between seeing those there on the second, my second duty station was in Vicenza, Italy. And at that small little chapel there, they would have a memorial for a fallen soldier almost every week. And you see how that tears units apart and families apart. And my worst day is never that bad, no matter how, if my I have clinical failures or leadership challenges or a patient not. So for me, always gives me a matter of perspective. And so, yeah, it helps me realize that when I'm whiny, that I have no reason to be. And it helps me drive on and say, you know, like, these are champagne problems. I need not worry about them.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was in the Navy here in Australia, David, there's a Navy base in Sydney. And I don't know if you know Sydney that well, but...
No.
So just up the road from the Navy base is a place called King's Cross. And it's regarded as... Well, it's probably becoming gentrified now, but back 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was a place where there was a lot of drug addicts, prostitution, strip clubs, those sorts of places. You get the picture. And I remember walking up to the cross one day because I had to go through there to get home. And there's this one part of the street. And I remember walking up there. I'd had a bad day. I was feeling miserable. I can't remember exactly why or what caused that feeling. But I vividly remember getting to the other end of the cross and going, you know what? My life's all right. I've got nothing to worry about. And you're right. Champagne problems, right?
For sure.
I wanted to touch on the aspect of performance, because you mentioned earlier that you were studying athletes and athletic medicine, and I know you've got a real interest in performance. And again, one of the things on your podcast is you get to speak to lots of high performers. And so I'm curious to ask you about some of the commonalities you see between high performance. I know there's a whole piece around habits, but I'm also curious to understand from your perspective, what is it that helps someone be really good at what they do, no matter what their field, whether it's dentistry or otherwise? What do you see as the commonalities?
Across the people that I've interviewed, particularly in dentistry, I see a sense of endurance. And that, for to me, that means that they make peace with the mundane. And they if I were to say a big error that I made in the first few years of my practice is that I was always looking for the transformational marketing piece, the transformational hire, the transformational new procedure in my mix. And these people, they chart a course, they're very clear on what they want, and they just chip away at it. They try and get a little bit better every day. And like you said, it goes back to the habitual nature. It's not something you do on Friday afternoons. It's something that you maybe do every morning. And it's sometimes not what you think of. Sometimes it's the discipline of journaling or the discipline of morning exercise or the discipline of morning meditation that feeds into this ability to go in there and do what needs to be done day in and day out, whether they feel like it or not. And sometimes that manifests as a clinical thing where you become the Pete Dawson of the world. And sometimes that becomes a business thing where you become the Rick Workman that establishes 800 dental practices across the United States. But if you compare that to athletes and high-level CEOs and people that are innovating in Silicon Valley, it still has the same commonalities. And it's been, I would say, an obsession of mine, especially in the last few years, to figure out, like, what makes people tick? And a lot of times it's easy to say, you know, they just had the golden hands and could always prep quickly and efficiently, and their temporaries look like finished porcelain and on. But when you really get at it, there's significant effort at the foundation of it. And then once that skill set is established, they always build upon it. So it's just taking one step after another. And going back to the courage conversation we had earlier, throughout the day, we have a number of decisions that we can make. But if we think about it as a micro decision that impacts our days, we can always step forward into courage or back into comfort. And that's not a difference of one, that's a difference of two from where you are now. And I think those people have made a daily discipline of every step, every decision is one little step forward into courage. Certainly sometimes they're big decisions, but it's the mundane and the endurance, to put into summary, that I think really is the ultimate differentiator there.
I really appreciate you saying that, because my observation of various people in various spaces is that we're often, and indeed myself, there are times when I'm looking for a quick fix. I think if I could go to the gym once and get a six pack, I'd be so there, right? But you're right. It's those daily habits, those daily executions. And for me, the quote that comes to mind, I think it's a John Maxwell quote. And if it's not, I'm sorry, whoever, I'm going to misquote, but it's, excellence is doing the ordinary things extraordinarily well, right? And so what you're speaking to is that daily discipline of just doing those ordinary things, building on them, getting better day in, day out, one foot after the other, being relentless, if you will. And I really appreciate that. So apart from the ability to endure, apart from the ability to put up with the mundane and actually enjoy that journey, what about those people who go, yeah, David, I understand that and that's cool. I'm doing okay with that. What else do you see as other threads that weave through the high performers that you've spoken through?
It's interesting you said that. My answer 6 to 8 months ago would have been different than today. To give a little backstory, I was on a stage with a lot of high-performing dentists, and I would judge, in this case, high performers as excellent cash flow, multiple practices, high achievers. And I think in my studies of high performance, a lot of times high achievement and high performance get slightly connected and blurred. And high performance, just to preface, is an increase of fulfillment as time goes on, a decrease of stress, an increase of self-love and identity, all these sorts of things. And so I should make very clear that these are high achievers. And I don't think that they, if you were to dig in deep, it may have been the happiest group or the most fulfilled group. They were rat racers, meaning they were reaching higher and higher levels at the cost of other things. And I posted a quote, and the quote, the presentation that I gave was on clarity. And it said, unhappiness is not knowing what you want and killing yourself to get it. And I literally heard a gasp from the stage. And the conversation was a little bit of a risk for me. I'd never really spoke that targeted on one subject, but in my heart, I felt like it was the message they needed to hear. And that gave me the feedback that I wanted, that it was in fact what they needed to hear. And I've since had lots of coaching conversations with that kind of echelon of people. And it goes back to clarity. They are chasing more for more's sake. Sometimes they're chasing other people's vision and version of success, but they haven't clearly defined it for themselves. And in doing so, they're building up their practice or practices. They're alienating relationships at home with their team. And it's all coming at a huge expense. And it's just not a sustainable model. So to answer your question, I would say it's clarity, knowing what you want and, more importantly, why you want it. Because if that gets foggy, we're all kind of driven because we had to get into dental school, get through dental school. A lot of it is expected of us because we put on that white coat and have lots of answers and diagnoses through the day. But ultimately, we're human. And my vision of success is different than your version of success. And to sit down and really take the time to understand, this is what I want and why I want it. You may be on the wrong path by just adding more volume of dentistry, more partners and associates. I'm not bashing on that whatsoever, but I think that should only be pursued if you know the end game, if you know how that plays into your legacy and the end of your day, and is it still serving the other important relationships in your life that aren't your patients and aren't your team?
I think that is really profound because, again, in my line of work, and I suspect in your line of work, people come through and they'll list out their goals and they'll want to own multiple practices and so on and so forth. And again, I'm not down on that at all. I'm not giving people a hard time around that. But I do feel that there is a significant portion of people who get caught up in the peer pressure of it all and wanting to live someone else's version of success, almost keep up with the Joneses. Well, I've got three practices just like my friends, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. So I wanted to ask you, why is it that so few people have that clarity?
I would say because we're not trained to seek it. I think there's a lot of dogma in the world, and that can manifest in lots of different things. What you were taught at home around the dinner table about business and money, and that may even be empowering you, it may be limiting you. But unless you take it upon yourself to engage in the self-study, and that's really important work, but you have to carve out the time that none of us have. And because it takes a certain level of creativity and suspending disbelief to really understand that what if all that I've worked for is for naught? I mean, that's a chance to pivot, or you could just sustain that and dig deeper into your misery and move towards this proverbial day called retirement for a lot of people. The trigger for me was Tim Ferriss's book, which I read, A 4-Hour Workweek, years ago, right when it first came out, before it became a bestseller. And when he started talking about the delayed life plan, something triggered in me where I felt like I need to figure out how to have it all. I don't want to wait 20 years to have the vacations. Can I in some way figure out a balance here where I can grow my business, grow as a person, still enjoy my family. And I'm never exactly on the path, but I always try and calibrate there. But like I said, it requires a fair amount of discipline, daily, weekly, monthly. I do a big kind of self-clarity retreat every year, and we're just not socialized to do that most important work. We're more socialized into chasing dollars and growing for growth's sake and just getting on that hamster wheel. And this is a moment to get off the hamster wheel and making sure that it's headed in the right direction and spinning at the right rate so that you don't burn out. Because you and I both know colleagues that have done amazingly well, but they hurt on the inside. And sometimes that leaves them sedating with drugs and alcohol, or sometimes that strains relationships that just shouldn't be. And it's just creating a blueprint for your life, just like you do your practice. You wouldn't get a loan for a practice without a business plan. And there's a reason there. They make you create clarity as you move forward in practice. And I think same, if not more, diligence should go into, as we say on the Relentless Dentist broadcast, creating your epic life.
Yeah, mate, I think there's some wonderful gems in there. And I just want to, it's a bit like a loose thread on a jumper. I'd like to just hold on to that thread and pull it a little bit and see where it leads us. Because I think for a lot of people listening to this podcast, they'll really resonate with the fact that I need to get clarity. Perhaps I've been living a version of someone else's definition of success. And I think understanding that we need to have clarity, but then the practice of finding clarity is another matter. So in your case, or in the case of others you've observed, apart from that self-reflection, which I understand is going to be integral to it, what are the mechanics, or what suggestions would you have to someone listening to the podcast going, hey, Dave, that's awesome. Now, how do I find clarity? How do I go within? What are the practices I should be considering to come up with this clarity? Is it that I go and sit at the foot of the mountain and meditate for a day or two? Or what do I do on a practical level? Because, you know, dentists are practical. We like things to do.
Exactly. I think you hit on a very important point. The more I talk about this, the more I realize, and I don't know if it's in popular literature or YouTube motivational videos, like find your purpose. And there's this population of people, and I would say most people, have the misconception that one day a lightning strikes you and all of a sudden you're clear and then you march in that direction. I've been doing this sort of work for probably almost 2 decades. And I feel it's like I'm on a spectrum, and sometimes I'm more clear and sometimes I'm less clear. And I write down the reminders where I'm like, I can't forget this, because my purpose gets hijacked. My vision of my practice gets hijacked from time to time. Sometimes that's marketing messages. Sometimes that's trying to hit the next home run with a transformational this or that. But I think the recognition first and foremost that it's a process, just like exercise, that kind of never should go away, because it's easy to be led astray by all the other messages that aren't your own. For me, going back to the eulogy exercise, it comes out of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, that and the chapters begin with the end in mind. And it literally set my world on fire when I realized that, okay, I can make peace that we're all going to die, and there will be that day of the funeral, and there will be people speaking of me. And the message in which I'm headed is not the message that I would like them to deliver. Yeah. Staying up late, eating pizza and drinking beer and skipping classes was not the legacy that I wanted to live. And even though that may change after I was an undergrad, quite frankly, if I wouldn't have had that opportunity, I'm really certain, and people don't believe me because they see this side of the reality now. But back then, if you talk to people that knew me at that time, they wouldn't have ever believed that I would get into dental school. They wouldn't ever believed that I would get on stages because I was shy, that I would be author of a book, be interviewing influential dentists with a podcast. But it was a pivot there that I realized that the path that I was on would not lead me to the place that I wanted to be. And as far as getting clarity, that scared me straight. For some other people, it may not work as well. But if there was one exercise that I would mandate of a client, is not begin with the end in mind a decade from now, but begin with the ultimate end in mind and make peace with your own demise, because that's a universal truth.
Yeah. None of us get out of this caper alive, do we?
And so it's that level of clarity that helps me realize now other smaller micro begins with the end of mind of like, how do I want my son who's 8 to behave when he leaves the home at 8 or 18 or 19? It's creating those intentions, but the clarity goes up and down the line. You can talk about the life. You can talk about the practice. You can talk about the day and the practice. You can talk about the procedure. And so there's ways to increase intention and intensity throughout the day too. So we can talk macro and we can talk micro, but clarity, you should always know how you want to feel and how you want to serve in almost any interaction. For example, I thought and meditated about the conversation that I had today, and I knew that I wanted to serve you and your listeners. And so having that intention as opposed to me just coming on here and answering questions completely changes things. And the other thing that I talked about a little bit with some colleagues that was another micro transformation for me was that my practice runs a little faster than I would like, to be very frank, trying to figure out ways to make it slow down a bit for myself and my team. I think we still serve at a high level, but I was feeling very distracted. So imagine I was doing a crown prep in operatory 3, and I had 2 hygienists impatiently waiting for me outside the door. And so I was in 3 places at once because I knew I should be in 3 places at once. And there's something that they talk about in high performance about releasing tension and setting intention. So for me, it was simply a matter, and again, it's a very small scale, but I'll tell you about the ripple effect of this in a second. I would feel kind of chaotic in my mind, and I started this what's called a doorway trigger. So I'd walk out of the doorway of the patient I was leaving, and I would just take a deep breath to reset. And then I was walking into the room with the next patient. I would have a trigger, and I would say to myself, through this door walks a happy man who is ready to serve. Seems rather insignificant, but it led to more eye contact, more presence for me. This is the after effect. I live in a ski resort town, and October is usually our slowest month. I prepare marketing wise. I've done this for 7 or 8 years now. And so on my mind, I was prepared for the low month of the year. And I hate that that's my mental framework, but I've learned to receive it as such. The only thing that I can think of that I changed in October of 2017 was that doorway trigger. And I didn't change any staff members. I didn't change my procedure mix. I didn't change the number of days I was in the office or hours I was in the office. Nothing that I can think of changed. I didn't change any marketing. And I did that, and we had our best month ever last October. And it was right after I learned that habit. And so we think patients don't pick up on that sort of thing. And I wouldn't have thought that I could have such a dramatic impact. But literally, that's the only thing that I can think of that changed. And again, that's just getting very clear about who do I want to show up as for my patients? And I just did that by asking myself a question: is who do my patients want to see when I walk in the door? And I figured they didn't want a grumpy man who was self-serving. So I said, through this door walks a happy man who is ready to serve.
That's awesome. That's really awesome, Devin. I love the fact that A, there's a self-awareness piece around that. B, there's the action piece around that. And obviously C, there's a fantastic outcome and result around that. So I think for anyone listening to that, just rewind and have a listen to that story again, because there's so much wisdom and gold in that, and there's so much practical things that you can take away into your own life. And the word that you use, which is a word that I love immensely, is the word intention. And it's possibly my favorite word because it really does set the scene, and it sets the mood, it sets the, it ultimately determines the outcome, right? And you said to me just a moment ago that you had the intention of coming onto this podcast to serve, and you've certainly done that, and the way you show up is reflective of that intention. And I think that there's firstly, thank you so much for being that person.
Thank you.
And secondly, there's so much to learn for all of us about setting the right intention. And I really appreciate that.
Thank you. You know, when I talk to dentists, if going back to this piece, intention at every level, most of them aren't getting what they want because they don't know what they want. And that goes from the patient interaction on through their life. And that the more clear you get, and when I say clear, I mean like crystal clear, painted picture. So your team can see your vision, whatever it looks like. You first have to get clear with yourself and make sure that it resonates with the outcomes that you really want, because that's where you really find out if you're chasing someone else's version of success. If it just doesn't resonate with you, then figure something out that does.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's a long time to be, you know, having your ladder up the wrong tree.
Yeah, good point.
So speaking of high-performance dentists, you are co-author of a book called Titans of Dentistry, which is going to be released over the next month or two, I believe, which I think all of us listening will be really pleased and happy to read that. I'm wondering, this is kind of going to feel like a spoiler alert, but I'm wondering, as you've gone through that interview process, talking to various performers, talking to various people who have, you know, excelled in their field, and understanding, as you said earlier, the difference between achievement and performance. I think that's a really key distinction. What can we expect coming through that book? Again, there's some wonderful people you mentioned. You spoke to Pete Dawson in there, Gordon Christensen's in there. I'm curious to ask you, you know, when you're going through that process of talking to these guys, again, any little gems, any little highlights there that we should keep an eye out for as we read through?
I would say two common themes, and that's a passion of mine, is finding things that relate to one another that seemingly aren't related. And the couple of things, as I proofread it, and like you said, it's off at the publisher now, is the similarities I saw again and again and again. One is that none of the people in the book, and we didn't design it in any way, we have different locations, style of practice, age, stages of practice. We intentionally tried to find kind of a smattering. So the 30 somethings would have someone to relate to, the 40 somethings would have someone to relate to, and on and on. The things that I would say.
And the 20 somethings like us, right?
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. Yeah. With no gray in their beard.
None. Right?
The two things that I saw is that I think I learned this a bit more when I studied high performance outside of dentistry, and then I found it later in dentistry, is that there's this very prevalent teaching is that you should only play to strength. And most of our strengths are clinicians. And the thing that I saw again and again and again is that the clinicians weren't afraid to learn marketing. The clinicians weren't afraid to learn leadership. The clinicians weren't afraid to learn business systems as well as their clinical systems. Sometimes developing skill sets outside of clinical dentistry is really what fueled the engine, because you and I both know dentists who have took a constant course of clinical CE, but their phone doesn't ring because they don't know anything about influence, or they don't. And so the ability to certainly lean on strength is something that I saw, but they didn't rely on it completely. They may surround themselves with people that complement their strengths or have strengths that contrast with theirs. I think that's part of leadership, but they still needed to know how to lead. And so the less they stayed in this little introvert scientist dentist bubble, the more their worlds were able to expand. So that was the first thing that I would see, is that they strengthened their weaknesses to the point where they can hold other people accountable, or they may, like in my case, found a new passion where the phone wasn't ringing. I had a pregnant wife and I learned marketing as a way to feed my family, but found that I love marketing.
Yeah, necessity is the mother of all skill, right?
Exactly. The other thing that I would say is that even though I've been doing these interviews for 5 years and interviewed a lot of people that I admired, I still had that notion that there are some people in our profession that literally had a path paved with gold. And we dig down into a moment of crisis in our questioning, and everyone has them. And sometimes they're much deeper and darker than you'll ever imagine. And it's the ability to be clear and persist. And some of those days where you're like, just make it to lunch, just make it to the end of the day, and where you feel like giving up, but knowing that there's a necessity outside yourself. Maybe that's a service or a legacy, or you don't want your children to see you fail. There was a trigger there that allowed them to continue to march in that same direction, even though it looked like the walls of the kingdom were burning down, that allowed them to be the people that, in some cases, like you mentioned, have become household names in our profession. And like we talked about earlier in this conversation, that gives us hope, because I've had those days where I'm like, am I in the wrong industry? What am I doing wrong here? And I was just in a bad spot. And knowing that there's light at the other end sometimes is what we need to continue persisting and not just throw up our hands in angst.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for anyone listening to that as well, one of the things I take from that particular story is that it comes back to what we spoke a bit about earlier. When you see those people who we really admire, the people we put up on a pedestal, You're right. We think that they've got it all sorted, that their life looks amazing. How could they possibly know anything about the struggles I have? Because they would never have had to have dealt with the stuff that I'm dealing with, because they're demigods. They've got all their crap together, right? But they're human beings, and they pull their pants on the same way that we do, and they have their daily struggles, and they've been able to get through it.
When you talk to these people and get to know them at a high level, I started to feel like if we as a profession consider this person gifted, it's an insult to all the struggle and strife and energy that they put into gaining that skill set and ability.
That is absolutely a wonderful perspective. I really appreciate that. So, David, while we're on the subject of missteps and boo-boos and failures in inverted commas, I'm curious to understand one of the setbacks you've had to overcome in your own career, and again, how you got through that, because I think when we go through an example, I know there'll be someone listening to this podcast who goes, oh, Dave, you're speaking directly to me. I get this. So I'm curious to understand from your perspective, what's something you had to get through?
Yeah, you know, it's a saga of almost 5 years. After the military, I was an associate and quite a good associateship, but just like the military, it kind of fired up my independence. And then after a while, I knew that I needed to be my own boss. And later would find out that I'm probably more of an entrepreneur than a dentist at heart. But it kind of packed up against all odds. It was a down economy in 2009. I had a house in Huntersville, North Carolina that I was upside down in. I found a place in Colorado that reminded me a lot of the European experiences that I had appreciated living in Europe. And that's Vail, Colorado, kind of a world-renowned resort. And I spent 1/4 of July here. And I looked at people and I was like, they celebrate life a lot like the Italians. And going back to the spirit of lifestyle design that I learned from Tim Ferriss, I was like, that's the environment I want to raise my child in, because I came from a much different one in Nebraska, where it was wake up when the sun comes up, go to bed when the work is done, rinse and repeat 7 days a week. And I'm not afraid to work hard, but I wanted something different for my working years. And so we left North Carolina, came here. It was much harder to get started than I had ever thought. Very high cost of living. I had a mortgage in North Carolina, an expensive rent here. In right before I moved here, I found out also my wife was pregnant. So there was an extra mouth to feed with the income I didn't have. And that's where I started learning marketing and resourcefulness and getting outside my comfort zone. And I'd go on TV spots and I'd go on radio spots. And if you've known me from my youth, that's like not Dave Maloli whatsoever. And so I had these financial ups and downs for a few years until I figured out the seasonality and how to really market and how to make the phone ring and how to convert those treatment plans into treatment. And I thought I had it figured out. And then I walked in 2013, November, into my office and found my wife face down on her laptop computer. And she looked up at me with these wide open, scared eyes, couldn't muster a sound, just let out a puff of air. And, you know, my son was 3 at the time. And immediately, because I saw her face and her arm posture and leg posture, that she had a stroke. And then the next couple of days, we almost lost her. And in that same time, she had a very graceful, miraculous, shocking to the doctors, shocking to the nurses recovery. But at the same time, I joke, but it's not really a joke, is that she recovered much, much faster than I did. And I would rage inside the practice. I was a horrible leader. It just took so much emotion from me, that paranoia that I could lose my practice, I could lose the mother of my son, and I could lose my wife. Everything that my identity was wrapped up into was in question. And it was some difficult times. And I share this from stage sometimes, that literally I stopped going to my morning huddles. I would get up out of bed at the very last minute just so I could walk in as the first patient. And some of those mornings was me dry heaving in the shower from all the anxiety. Those days were the days where I would say, hey, Dave, just make it through lunch. And hey, Dave, just make it through the end of the day. And those periods became longer and longer as I persisted in kind of pulling myself out of that gutter. And going back to some of the things we talked about, it was connecting to a higher purpose. And it was like, I just didn't want it to end that way. I didn't want it to play out that way. And I had that little boy at home that at first, when I found out Kara was pregnant, it seemed like one more thing. But through and through those years, and even today, he's the why. You know, I remember looking over his crib at times and saying, Bennett, like, I don't know how we're going to make it through this, but we'll figure it out. And so there's lots of lessons to be learned there, namely that when you're going through the fire, you just got to keep on going, because the victory at the other side can be quite sweet. And now I'm kind of beyond that. I've let go of a lot of things that were haunting me. And a lot of dentists as I speak about this can relate. It doesn't manifest like I explained with a wife who had a stroke and a practice that was about to crash and burn, but they have their own crises of knowing that you can succeed at the highest levels and feel fulfilled on the other side of that, even though it's dark and it doesn't seem like that, is a lesson that I want dentists to recognize and understand. Because like I said, it was a common theme when we interviewed 35 of the highest performers in dentistry. And it's a thread that I can tap at, because now people know, like, it's okay to talk about this, because it's more of a norm than people realize. Because we, you know, dentists, if your first name is doctor, you're not trained to talk about this personal side of things, but I've seen it time and time again. So I like to share that story, not to gather any sort of empathy or sympathy or pity, but to know that that power is within all of us to figure it out and to come back stronger after those really trying times.
Well, that's an incredible story, Dave. And firstly, I know the purpose of the story is not to gather sympathy and empathy, but nonetheless, we are all glad that your wife is well, and we're all glad that you're through that as well. So it's really wonderful. But it does speak to the point that all of us have more in us than we think, right? All of us have reserves that we can tap into that we probably don't even know that we have. And hopefully we don't need to call on those reserves too often. But I suspect, as you've indicated, talking to 35 people, every single person has a moment where they're going to need to call on those reserves. And I've certainly had my challenges and ups and downs as well. And people, you know, sometimes assume that everything looks rosy from looking in from the outside. But beneath that, there is a person. There is a real person who's got a day-to-day life with day-to-day struggles. And sometimes those struggles are a little bit, and sometimes those struggles are quite deep. And for anyone listening to the show, just know that that's a normal part of life. And like Dave, you'll get through it.
That's for sure. I think it's Tony Robbins that talks about, we all want resources, but what we really need is resourcefulness. And when life grabs you by the collar and slams you up against the wall and says, what are you going to do about it? You can get immensely resourceful. I remember playing little credit card games where I'd borrow from this credit card to pay off this credit card. And I don't even know how to explain it now, but I figured it out at the time, just to live one more day, one more month to make payroll. And like you said, sometimes we need to dig deep, but finding triggers that find that best within us, I think, is also important, so that we're capable when those surprises, those unwelcome surprises strike. So I think it's important to know that within, but also to build that as a muscle, so you have a bit of an insurance policy when an unexpected threat to your income or your family comes about, so that you're prepared to take that on.
Yeah, lovely. You've been incredibly generous with your time, and I really thank you for that. I wanted to just ask you one last question as we wrap up, and putting the retrospectoscope on, which is a luxury, of course, that we don't have. But nonetheless, because there'll be, like your show, there'll be a demographic listening to our show that is younger, another demographic that's older, and a lot in between. What I'd like to ask you is, if you were to give your 25-year-old self some advice based on the experience you had so far in your life, what is it that you'd look back and say, Dave, this is the advice I'd give you?
I would say, Dave, you're way too independent. And I heard that from my father years before. He said, David, you're way too damn independent. And through all of this, through podcasting, the thing that I've realized is that the power and the joy that I get from life, get a little emotional here, is in the power of the relationships that I have. And those are powerful professional relationships, power personal relationships, family relationships. And I didn't take a lot of time to nurture them. And going back to clarity now on my whiteboard, I have my key relationships written down, because there's old college friends and things like that that I'll forget to text and call. And then what do you know, a year has gone by, and you don't want that call out to be when they really need you. You want to continue to nurture those relationships. And that goes into the practice. Are you adding praise and building confidence with the people and showing true love to them so that they can love you and your patients back? So that would be the message that I'd have give my younger self, was that you're too independent. All the magic in your life will come out of powerful relationships. And that magic has come at business opportunities in lots of different ways to impact, just powerful connections. But for me, the monetary piece is a distant second to realizing that that's the real vibrancy of life. And If you study people at the end of their days, the regrets of the dying, it usually goes back to, I wish I would have stayed connected. I wish I would have nurtured these relationships. I wish I would have been true to myself. And we get caught up in this do it, more, more, more hamster wheel. And that serves a purpose, but it can't be the only thing that you're serving, because your children need you, your family needs you, your patients need you, and there's lots of hats that we wear, but to make sure that they're also serving us, and there's this series of win-win relationships, has been my breakthrough in the last 5 years, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think that's really profound. And I think the other relationship that's important there is relationship with self.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean that in a selfish way, but just to take care of oneself in the same process as well. Something I've had to learn as well in my own life, I've perhaps lacked in that area. I'm getting a little bit better at it. Still got a long way to go. But anyway, Dave, I really appreciate A, the wisdom that you've shared with us, B, your openness and willingness to be raw and real and authentic. And from all of us here, I want to say thank you. You're an absolute gentleman, and it's been a joy and a pleasure to have you on our podcast. And I hope we can do it again soon, mate. Thank you.
It'd be a total honor. I respect you and what you are. Who you are, I should say, and what you're doing. And it's easy to have these conversations because we kind of resonate at the same wavelength. So the respect is mutual, and I appreciate what you're doing as well.
Thank you, Dave. Cheers, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.